So tonight I'm going to talk about radical self-responsibility. So many things to say about this. And I guess the first is, there are just so many ways that we give our power away. You know, one of them is blame. You know, that person made me feel such and such. You know, that person is responsible for blah, blah, blah. And even self-blame falls into this category. You know, self-blame is this extraordinary, almost this sort of virtuoso, you know, posture where we're both the accused and the accuser. And it's really a very powerless position to be in, this place of self-blame. We're just kind of captive to our inner critic. And similarly, victim status kinds of things, you know. I can't be happy because of such and such, because of the choices that other people made, the circumstances out in the world. And so one part of self-responsibility is just to look at all the ways that we might be giving our power away and recognize the choice that we have. We have so much choice in every moment. Of course, I have no control over what other people do or what happens in the larger world, but I have tremendous choice over how it impacts me and what I make it mean in my own life. Another level is just, of course, the ordinary meaning of responsibility, taking responsibility for my actions. And this is tricky because, you know, obviously there's going to be times that I act and there's an immediate consequence and I have to take responsibility for it. There's always the unintended consequences of my actions, and that's always a bit tricky. I'm intending one thing, but then another thing also happens. I have to take responsibility for that. And sometimes it gets tricky when there's a long delay in the consequences of my actions. You know, this way that, you know, for example, I might be making impulsive purchases, you know. Oh, I really want this, so I'm going to spend a little bit of money. I can, you know, it's not quite on my budget, but I can break the rules here. And then, you know, I can break the rules here, and I can break the rules here. And then later on, it's like, oh, wait, where'd my money go? Now the thing that I really want, I don't have money for. You see what I mean? Like, we're not necessarily realizing that all those little actions set us up, you know, or similarly, you know, relating to someone. You know, I'm having a horrible day, so I'm particularly... I'm so much in my own stuff that I'm a bit gruff or unfeeling to somebody, not realizing that perhaps I trigger them. And then later on, you know, I'm perfectly fine, but then I'm wondering why this person's giving me the cold shoulder, you know. And so it's very tricky sometimes, you know, because sometimes our actions have very, very delayed consequences, you know. And we may be in a completely different place and a completely different mindset than when, you know, when we set that chain of consequences in motion. Another aspect of self-responsibility has to do with sort of monitoring our inner world. Responsibility for my mental space, responsibility for my emotional space. And the naive view is that, you know, people think, well, I have very little control over that. You know, thoughts just come through my head. I have no control. I feelings just come. I have no control. And it's tricky because, of course, the more we experiment with meditation, the more we experiment with mindfulness, we realize that there is a certain amount of choice. There's a choice in the relationship I establish to my thoughts. You know, if I'm believing everything that comes into my head, well, that's one thing. But if I can just watch them, that's a very different kind of relationship. And much in the same way with feelings, we don't necessarily control all the feelings that arise, but it's a very different relationship to go on the roller coaster of feelings versus to receive our feelings and to hold them with a mindful container. The human capacity for awareness is ultimately much larger than anything we can feel. You know? I mean, ultimately, you know, according to Buddhism, the human capacity for awareness is the Buddha nature itself. And the more we practice resting in this awareness, it is something that we have to kind of cultivate, the more we're just able to hold even very, very passionate, stormy kinds of emotions. And of course, this is related to another part of consequences of actions. There's the, you know, the old medieval view is they're the sins of commission, and then there are the sins of omission, you know? And, you know, there's the, you know, the things I do that have bad consequences, but then there's also the things that I just fail to do. Maybe because I get too busy or too distracted in the moment, and I just fail to do it, and then that has bad consequences, you know? Sometimes people have a story about I should be practicing meditation more, I should be practicing mindfulness more. And it, you know, there's some part of us that knows this would be really good, but then we kind of get busy and distracted, and then that doesn't happen, and the fact that that's not happening has consequences. You know, and deep responsibility is really looking at all of that. Like, you know, at any moment, what is it that I'm doing? What is it that I'm not doing? And how are those consequences playing out? A part of taking deep responsibility is a very important part, actually, is, you might say, the flip side of letting go. Letting go of all the things that are clearly beyond our control. You know, certainly the life choices that any other human being is making, that's something entirely beyond my control. You know, world states, political states, you know, all that stuff. And it's easy to invest a lot of emotional energy into, you know, especially the people that are near and dear to us, how they're behaving. And, you know, I want them to think this way. I want them to behave this way. I want them to make this choice and not that choice, you know. And tremendous energy goes into that, which leaves us feeling kind of powerless. And it's this funny balance because I don't have any control over any other person in my life, but I have influence. And we often underappreciate the power of our influence, you know. And our influence may be the words that we say, but even more so, our influence is simply the energy that I hold. You know, we really underestimate how much of a gift we give the entire world if we can just walk through a day in a more balanced, calm place. Energy healers talk about how we're always impacting each other all the time at the energetic level. We're all, as it were, sending out signals of our, you know, of the mind states that we're holding. And other people are picking up on this, that, you know, often at very subliminal levels, you know. And of course, some of this plays out with pheromones and things like that. You know, and it's a very interesting question to ponder. How would you live your life if you knew that the mindset, the mental state, the emotional state with which you walk through the world was in some sense impacting everybody on the planet? You know? And to some extent, according to Buddhism, that is the case. You know, the Buddha talked about this, the net of Indra. The net of Indra was this metaphor he used in the Lotus Sutra. And it's a net, and at each point where two strings cross, there's a diamond. And each diamond reflects the whole of the net. And so that if there's any tangle or rip or tear in any one part of the net, it's reflected throughout the entire net. And he talked about, we are the net of Indra, we human beings. And we're always reflecting each other that way. You know, and so in that worldview, everything I'm doing, even in the privacy of my own room, you know, we're so attached to our American individualist dream. You know, I can go in my room and shut my door and be myself and it doesn't affect anyone else, you know, this kind of thing. You know, what if every moment the state of mind I have is impacting all beings? You know, would I live my life differently if I believed that? There's a poem by Rilke that I really like, and I can't recite it, but he sees an archaic torso of Apollo, the god Apollo. And of course, the god Apollo in Greek mythology, he was famous for his gaze. Apollo was the sun, and his gaze encompassed everything. He saw the entire world and everything that was happening, this tremendously powerful gaze of the god. And Rilke is looking at this statue, and he says, you know, of course, the torso, there's no head. And so he says, you know, we don't actually see those powerful eyes, but there's this quality of the god's gaze that just permeates every part of the statue. And he describes it, you know, bursting forth from every part like a star. And the last two lines of the poem are simply, "For there is no part of this world that does not see you. You must change your life." And it's funny, this world that we live in now, where, you know, it's not really clear to what extent privacy is something that we have anymore, or privacy is something that is going to be around much longer, you know? Just the nature of how much information is shared. What if it really was the case that no part of this world does not see us? Would we live our lives any differently? So I'll share with you, of course, you're probably all familiar with this prayer, the Serenity Prayer. It was written by a theologian, Reinhold Niebuhr, but it's often used in Alcoholics Anonymous and other 12-step groups. And I've kind of, in reflecting on this prayer over the years, I've actually modified it. Modified it as I've thought more about this topic of radical self-responsibility. So I'll share with you this expanded version of the Serenity Prayer. May I take deep responsibility for all the consequences of my actions, both intentional and unintentional. May I take deep responsibility for my emotional states. May I take deep responsibility for everything I control and everything over which I have some kind of influence. May I accept complete surrender toward all those aspects of life that are beyond my control and my influence. May I cultivate tremendous trust and acceptance wherever my control and influence ends. May I relax into the deep vulnerability of human life. And between what I control and what I do not, what I influence and what I do not, may I have the wisdom, the courage, and the insight to know the difference. So at this point, I'll share the quote sheet. I'm a teacher, I always have quote sheets, I always have handouts. So I put my version of the Serenity Prayer at the top, and then the first quote is the quote from Rilke. And then a quote from an extraordinary woman, Eleanor Roosevelt. Remember always that you have not only the right to be an individual, you have the obligation to be one. Stanislaus Jerzy-Lec says, no snowflake in an avalanche ever feels responsible. I love that one. Jim Rohn says, you must take personal responsibility. You cannot change the circumstances, the seasons, or the wind, but you can change yourself. That is something you have charge over. Wayne Dyer says, everything you do is based on the choices you make. It's not your parents, your past relationships, your job, the economy, the weather, an argument, or your age that is to blame. You and only you are responsible for every decision and choice you make, period. Natalie Goldberg says, this is your life. You are responsible for it. You will not live forever. Don't wait. I like the urgency in that. Barbara DeAngelis says, living with integrity means not settling for less than what you know you deserve in your relationship, asking for what you want and need for others, speaking your truth, even though it might create conflict or tension, behaving in ways that are in harmony with your personal values, making choices on what you believe and not what others believe. That last one is hard, making choices on what you believe and not others believe. A friend was pointing out recently that sometimes you make choices and it feels good on the outside, but it just, you're not satisfied with it. And someone was describing a situation like this, and a friend observed, you know, they were choosing somebody else's standards. They were choosing somebody else's values. And so it looked good on the outside, but it didn't satisfy them at all, you know? And it's funny, there's something in us, a deep soul part in us, that just so wants to be authentically ourselves. It doesn't even care about success or failure. It just wants to know, was this experience mine? Even if it was an abysmal failure, if that was my failure, then the soul is happy, you know. The head gets all wrapped up, but I want to be a success, you know. Andrew Clavin says, this isn't just the way things are. This is the way you've made them. This is the result of your choices, your actions, yours. John Miller says, there's not a chance we'll reach our full potential until we stop blaming each other and start practicing personal accountability. And so there's this very powerful relationship to how responsible I am and how much I'm able to step into my power. Jonathan Haidt says, when you first catch sight of fault in yourself, you're likely to hear frantic arguments from your inner lawyer excusing you and blaming others, but try not to listen. You are on a mission to find at least one thing you did wrong. When you extract a splinter, it hurts, briefly, but if you keep going and acknowledge the fault, you are likely to be rewarded with a flash of pleasure that is mixed oddly with a hint of pride. It is the pleasure of taking responsibility for your own behavior. It is the feeling of honor. J.K. Rowling says, there is an expiry date on blaming your parents for steering you in the wrong direction. The moment you are old enough to take the wheel, responsibility lies with you. Bob Waldrop says, my life is immeasurably enriched by taking personal responsibility to do what I can with what I have, where I am. Steve Maraboli says, the victim mindset dilutes human potential. By not accepting personal responsibility for our circumstances, we greatly reduce our power to change them. I'm not sure how to pronounce the author of Wealth for All, but he said, if you forgive someone for something they did to you, it doesn't mean that you agree with what they did or believe it was right. Forgiving that person means you have chosen not to dwell on the matter anymore. You've moved on with your life. And so the tremendous personal power there can be in forgiving and letting go. Lori E. Meyer says, the power behind taking responsibility for your actions lies in putting an end to negative thought patterns. You no longer dwell on what went wrong or focus on whom you're going to blame. You don't waste time building roadblocks to your success. Instead, you are set free and can focus on succeeding. Anton St. Martin says, self-pity is spiritual suicide. It is an indefensible self-mutilation of the soul. Wow. Richie Norton says, whatever is triggering you is on you. Arikos Bras says, stop blaming other people for your own behavior. Own the truth. If you don't like it, then invest time and energy to change it. Alana Hunt says, it is only when you take responsibility for your life that you discover how powerful you truly are. And Amy Lee Mercury says, the secret ingredients to true happiness, decisive optimism, and personal responsibility.